It's well known that universities which are home to the most profitable college football teams often depend on those teams to subsidize much of the rest of the athletic program. But it may surprise even the most passionate fans that those teams operate as profit centers separate from the schools they represent. Gilbert Gaul, the author of Billion Dollar Ball, subtitled A Journey Through the Big Money Culture of College Football, joins me now. Mr. Gaul, welcome to Only a Game.
Thank you for having me on the show.
I'd like to start with you helping us understand why the programs at the universities most committed to football are so expensive. Alabama, for example, spends more than $40 million a year on its program. That's more than double what it spent in 2007 when head coach Nick Saban arrived.
It's just very expensive. The amount of money going to head coach salaries in college football at the elite level is just extraordinary. Saban, again, not to pick on him or Alabama, $7.1 million in 2014. The top 10 coaches in college football at elite schools are averaging about $5 million in salary a year. And then, of course, they have 9 full-time assistants. And their salaries have all gone through the roof as well. Then you have the spending on facilities. You have all the back office operations, which have grown, the number of employees and athletic departments. So it's one thing after another.
You mentioned facilities, not only stadiums and weight rooms, but academic support programs. Tell us about the one at the University of Oregon.
These things, the academic support programs, are relatively recent phenomena. By that, I mean within the last couple of decades. Instead of just, you know, maybe a tutor or two, you have this incredible and elaborate and really expensive operation with maybe 100 tutors, with academic advisors, with psychologists, with life skill coaches. And at Oregon, the center, this $42 million center, is incredibly lavish. I went to visit it, spent a day there. It looks like a museum of modern art. There's a gaslit fire. There's a fire pit in the lobby. It's the most extraordinary thing you've ever seen. It's exclusive to the athletes, other than a coffee bar on the first floor. Mm. And so then I went and looked at the Honors College at Oregon. The building is a 77-year-old building built during the WPA in the Great Depression. The elevator didn't work. There was no interior staircase to get up to the second floor. They had 1.5 classroom buildings that they could use for the students.
You compare what has been described as the college football arms race to the housing bubble or the dot-com bubble, both of which, of course, eventually burst. Tell us a little bit about this arms race and whether you think the ever more expensive enterprise of college football will eventually burst.
Just Texas alone, I think there were 5 schools that spent, during the period I looked at them, $1 billion on new stadiums. So the idea is that you have to have this in order to make the business model work. What I'm curious about is all of this going to stay the way it is, or is it going to change? And I'm interested in the notion of the disruptive effects of technology. You know, whether the younger generation of students and fans is as interested in college football as their parents and grandparents were? And the short answer is, I don't think so. I mean, we've begun to see some indications where students are leaving games at halftime or they're not showing up at games. So I think, you know, looking down a decade or so out, I think there are a few signs that it's not going to collapse, but this kind of monster we see as college football now, you know, it might be affected by some of these things and maybe not be quite as big.
Did any of the coaches, athletic directors, college presidents, or chancellors with whom you spoke offer an alternative to the system you describe in Billion Dollar Ball?
No, because they think that this business model is a great business model. They're bringing in money that can help pay for the so-called poor sports that really don't have any revenue. So, you know, the athletic directors, basically, they're happy with what they have for the most part because the model's working. It's ginning up all of this money. And, of course, their salaries have gone up as well.
Well, it's a successful model at the schools where the football team is very successful and has a gigantic and wealthy fan base, but it's a mug's game for almost everybody else, I think.
Yeah, I think so as well. I looked at and visited a number of these schools because I was interested in this basic question, well, why do you play football? And I went to Akron, for example, and Akron has struggled since 2000. Its record is 64-114, yet they build a $60 million football stadium. They were paying their football coach $500,000 a year. The model didn't seem to work. When I spoke with the president, he told me, well, you know, we think we're going to win at some point in time. And by the way, this is the only thing that we have on campus where I can get a large number of people to pay attention to. You know, since then, Akron has announced a $60 million hole in its university finances. It's laying off 213 people. It eliminated the baseball program. But do you think they took anything out of football? And the answer is no.
Gilbert Gall, twice a Pulitzer Prize winner, is the author of Billion Dollar Ball, A Journey Through the Big Money Culture of College Football. Gilbert, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Well, thank you for having me on. It's been great.